Hello, everyone. I am Molly Wood.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Welcome once again to Make Me Smart. We are joined, as we always are, by you, because as we say round these parts, none of it, we do say this actually, none of us is as smart as all of us. We also say round these parts a lot.
For a second, I thought you were saying none of us say this, just to be clear. We only say it once a week on the podcast, which is not true. That's not true at all. It's funny because there's a note in here, which I assume is some sort of a prompt in our daily rundown that says current mood.
Status.
Current mood. So close to vacation.
Oh, are you really? Oh, you are, aren't you?
I am. I'm going to the wilderness.
Like on purpose?
Well, I'm going to Montana.
Oh, all right.
Now everyone knows. See you there, guys.
Yep.
Anyway, so close. And I think we could all use a vacation. Hey, here's a funny story. I'm fascinated by people and their weird professions. We're gonna get to the meat soon, but this is actually really interesting. I recently encountered at a party of all things a graphologist, like a person who analyzes handwriting.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was sort of weird. They had her there as like a party trick, like getting your palm read, I guess.
Yeah.
Except that you sit down and you write some stuff and then she tells you all about yourself.
Wow.
And she sent me an email the other day. Whatever, 2 weeks after this party.
Yeah.
She goes, because I gave her my card because I was like, this is so fascinating. Maybe we can have you on Make Me Smart to just talk about all the stuff that you use this for, because companies hire her, you know, for depositions and for, I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Wow.
And yeah, it's really interesting, but also a little bit palm readery. And she sent me this email and she's like, Molly, your handwriting sample was on the top of a pile of things and it fell out the other day, and I turned to my cat and I said, that woman needs a vacation.
Oh my God, I turned to my cat. So you might have noticed we've burned through the whole beginning theme music talking about the
graphologist. We used it all. I liked it. It was very soothing. It just made me want to keep talking, apparently.
So what are we talking about this time? Come on, let's clue the people in.
All right. It was safe to say, obviously, the current mood is somewhere between exhausted and kind of overly adrenaline, I guess, from the all of our kind of news world. Yeah. So we're kicking back. We're going to talk to someone about something normal, you know, just writing a book, being normal.
There is also, though, a whole bunch of not normal to talk about. And I've got a new entrant. If I could just, at this late stage of our programming development, throw it in. I've got the new normal. So we've got normal, not normal, new normal.
Oh, my goodness.
Just came up with that on fly.
You're blowing my mind right now. Blowing my mind.
All right.
As it turns out, though, our conversation is all about being not normal. That is with Jennifer Romolini, Chief Content Officer at what is about to be Shondaland.com. She wrote a book called Weird in a World That's Not, a career guide for misfits, F-ups, I'm paraphrasing, and failures.
Get a load of you being afraid to say bad words on the podcast. Ha! Wuss. Also, we are going to tell some, well, we don't want that E, right, from Apple Podcasts?
Exactly.
We're going to tell some of our greatest weird at work stories, too, because everybody is kind of weird, actually.
I don't know if I'm telling those stories. However, weird, I think we can all agree, is the new normal in work life and the news fix.
The News Fix, part of the show, which I would say we are recording, by the way, on a Tuesday. So, you know, news changes fast. So this is when we're timestamping it. Tuesday morning-ish, LA time. There's a lot in our general bailiwick. So I'm going to let you start.
Yeah, it turns out the world will not end in fire or ice, but in cyber attacks.
That was very good. Game of Thrones in a month, y'all.
I mean,
you know nothing, Jon Snow.
One of the things in the paradigm of normal versus not normal that we've talked about on the show is paying attention to the things that actually matter or are actually happening and getting ignored. I suspect we can no longer continue to ignore what has been a growing trend since basically that big theft of all the NSA hacking tools. Because just today, there is the second since that big theft of NSA hacking tools, major ransomware attack that is spreading across the world and hitting. I literally took a screenshot of this tweet with the rundown of things that have been allegedly hit so far. Banks, power grids, postal services, government ministries, media, airport, cell providers, the largest shipping companies in the world, you know, stuff like that, are having their networks completely locked up by hackers at this exact moment that we're talking right now. Who knows what it'll be like tomorrow?
Let's name some of these companies, right? And I'm just going to run through the M's. Merck, the Danish shipping company. Maersk, Mondelez, the big spinoff out of Kraft. Also Rosneft, Russia's biggest oil company. And here's where I get to my new entry in the normal, not normal streaks. This now is becoming the new normal.
If that's the case, we are in a lot of trouble.
Well, don't you think, though? I mean, honestly, I think that when companies of this size and scale are being attacked and being found to be vulnerable, it's kind of a new normal.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that I think hacking, it's interesting because the corollary to that is that big, you know, company and government cyber attacks have become all too normal.
Mm-hmm.
There's the new normal and the all too normal.
Wow. That might be a hair too meta.
I think because there haven't been, because the consequences have not been obvious enough or serious enough,
mm-hmm,
that it has not led to, you know, I mean, the security researchers for at least the last decade, probably much longer, have been tearing their hair out trying to get companies and governments to wake up to the massive vulnerabilities lurking in their networks that include the potential to shut down power grids, to shut down hospitals. Like, people could have actually died as a result of the WannaCry ransomware attack that happened a couple of weeks ago in the UK. It hit hospitals. Patients had to be rerouted. Patient records were unavailable. It's a very serious and dangerous situation.
Yep.
And a lot of researchers think, as has been the case with some other hacks, that some of these ransom demands are just a smokescreen. And that what's really happening is that there's an attack below the surface that's probing for other vulnerabilities or stealing credentials,
wow,
employee credentials
that
from
we just don't know about? Is that the deal?
Yeah.
Huh.
That the ransomware is really, you know, they're just like, yeah, we'll distract you by locking up your network while we steal everything in it and then use that to launch even further attacks. And at some point, I mean, it's great if the hackers get paid and let go of these networks. But at some point, some real nihilist who wants to watch the world burn is going to come along, mm-hmm, and take this stuff hostage. And it's unclear whether we're going to be able to get it back.
Hmm. All right. Thanks for coming, y'all. That's been this week's Make Me Smart. See you. Have a nice afternoon.
Today, it's Tuesday. I'm on a toot. What if Maersk can't get its networks back? What if Maersk loses control of its entire, you know, computer infrastructure and global shipping grinds to a halt? I know that this is a worst case scenario, but it's really not. I don't think security researchers think it is.
Yeah. I don't have the answer. So the question is, when are people going to start paying attention, right? That's
exactly
actually the root question of all this. When are people going to start paying attention? I would submit that it's a little like global warming. It's not happening to me, man. And so, you know, it's 70 and sunny here in L.A. today. It's all good.
Maybe.
Maersk. What's Maersk? You know?
Maersk. Never heard of it.
Yeah.
Oh, that attack, that was in the U.K.
Right.
It didn't really affect us. Anyway, eye on the ball, people.
That's the new too normal, I guess.
The new all too normal.
Hmm.
The new normal comes from the all too normal, which is all happening because we normalize.
Yeah, no, I'm not going there.
I'm stepping away.
Step back. I got a couple more I want to run by you.
Please do.
Okay, the whole, the European Union, or the European Commission, technically speaking, and the competition commissioner, Margrethe Vestager, hitting Google with $2.7 billion worth of euro monopoly go away fine. What do you make of that?
That was so smooth. Can you say that again? Can you say her name again?
Oh, Margrethe Vestager.
Look at him.
Yeah.
What a radio guy.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, this is neither unexpected or, if anything, it's sort of overdue. What it makes me want to discuss for the purposes of our farther reaching podcast is this question of, like, what is a monopoly?
Don't we know?
Because there are different kinds, right? Like, monopoly is the place you want to go to as a business.
Yeah, of course you do. Of course you do. You bet. And that's why that's the tension between regulators and companies. See also Microsoft, AT&T, and Standard Oil.
Yeah. Somebody made a great comment the other day about with respect to Uber, I think, and it was like, you kids don't even know. You kids don't even know from bad behavior. Back in the day, Microsoft would have eaten all y'all.
Yeah, well, right. Right.
Like, Bill Gates, Microsoft would have rolled into Uber and been like, we're going to buy you out.
So here's actually the question, and I know the answer before I ask it, but I'd love to hear your take. Microsoft got in all kinds of trouble here and had its own monopoly trials and tribulations. Google, well, let's stick with Google since that's the case at hand, right? Google is fat, thumb, and happy here in the States, and it's taken the Europeans to say, no, this is unfair competitive practices.
Yeah, this has been a really interesting tension to watch for a while now, how the European Union and how European regulators have responded to these kind of big American tech companies running roughshod, you know, and they have essentially said, we don't want to let that happen. We don't want you to be able to get so much power that you are as monopolies, you know, by the legal definition or otherwise. and take over essentially from any other company in Europe that wants to spring up. And some of it has been, I don't necessarily think it's because these companies have come from America, but it's, you know, it's a different perspective.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it does make you look back and say, why is our approach, our particular brand of capitalistic approach here in the U.S. to say, yeah, no, these companies should totally just do whatever they want.
Well right. And it's changed in less than a generation, right? I mean, if you remember Microsoft, that was a huge battle in the late 90s. And here we are 20-ish years later. And all the regulators, I mean, while they're taking on some, you know, mergers and acquisitions and all that, mostly on the big bad voodoo daddies, they're going, nah, I'm all right.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I don't quite get that.
And it's unquestionably, you know, I mean, there's a pretty great piece in Business Insider today saying that all of Google's troubles in Europe are entirely of its own making. Unquestionably. And Google's response to this fine is essentially to say, yeah, but it's such a great user experience. Like, well, we cheated.
Sorry,
we totally cheated. We did bury those other search results.
Yeah.
Because the accusation here, to catch people up, is that Google favors its own results over the competition and buries, you know, Yelp and Expedia and Hotel Tonight and whatever all the way at the bottom of the page, which is essentially invisible, and puts its own results up top. This particular fine only applies to shopping comparison tools. And they said, yeah, but people just want to see the result. They don't want to go to another site where they have to conduct the search again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what the EU has said is like, hey, that's not your job. You're a search engine. You're supposed to point people to the tools where they can, the businesses that are built on providing these services, not become the business that provides every service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wonder how much business Google actually does from its comparison shopping sites or whatever. Probably not all that much.
Oh, no, tons, because they're ads.
Oh, well, that's true. That's
I mean, they're essentially ads. Yeah. But it would be interesting to find out that number.
Yeah, which is buried somewhere in some statement someplace. All right, I got one more, and this is the wages of not normal, wages in the biblical sense.
Ooh, okay.
It's the healthcare bill.
I was going to say, is the secret health
care? It's the secret health care bill that is no longer secret, and as a result of it being no longer secret, is really no longer popular at all with Republican senators, many of whom are saying, not only am I not going to vote for the motion to proceed on this puppy, that is to even have the debate, I don't like the bill itself, Mr. Mitch McConnell, Senate Majority Leader, and this is what you get for negotiating in secret. And so that is my wages of not normal, because it was not normal the way this bill was carried through the Senate in the past 3 weeks. And now you're seeing that payoff. And I just wanted to sort of timestamp that here or mark that, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that is very notable.
Yeah.
And it's a good reminder that sometimes, you know, I think people want everything to happen right away.
Yeah.
And consequences of not normal take time to play out. It's unclear whether Republicans will truly defect from this bill.
Yeah, we don't know. Right. Right.
We don't know. But there are consequences and there will be divides created as a result of this process that take a long time to play out.
Yeah.
We could probably spend way too much time on the healthcare bill.
Yeah, we could, but let's not.
Which I suppose we probably should not because it may go to a vote this very week, right?
It may well. We'll see. We'll see. Mitch McConnell is counting noses.
We don't want to be way behind the times.
We really only want to be a little tiny bit behind the times. All right. So those were the things that I wanted to hit in the fix of news. You?
I like them. I like all of this eye on the ball thing. It all goes to our ongoing conversation about outcomes. Like, let's wait for the outcomes of things and keep our eye on the things that really matter, such as global economic collapse triggered by cyber attacks.
There you go again with the doom and gloom. Isn't that usually my job?
You think I'm being an alarmist, but this is really bad.
I'm not doubting
it's
that.
So bad.
I'm absolutely not doubting that, which is why I'm saying it's the new normal, just to get my own catchphrase in.
Bad is the new normal. Ugh.
All right. Here's what you need to do. Write to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org or go to our website. It's marketplace.org/makemesmart. I always get those confused because they're basically palindromic. I know they're not technically palindromic, but you know what I mean. Or you can tweet us at Kai Rizdahl. At Molly Wood is the other place you can get us. And yeah.
if you want to be part of our editorial meetings, and I know you do because every time people stumble upon them for the first time, they're so delighted. We have so much fun every Monday on Facebook at 12 noon Pacific on our Facebook pages, facebook.com/Mollywood or /Kai Rizdahl. Don't worry, for the many of you, like kind of a surprising number of you who have emailed about why we are only on Facebook, we are working on it. We are working on distributing this video in other places, namely our own website, marketplace.org. So hopefully we'll have some news on that soon, because I know that I know there are days when it actually feels straight up hypocritical to drive you guys to Facebook after talking about how it's ruining the world.
Yep.
So we're working on it.
Next up, Jennifer Omelini and the value of weird. First, though, we got to pay the bills because that has value too.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews, and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
So, a little background on Jennifer Omelini. She is one of those behind-the-scenes people whose name you might not know, but whose work you may have been familiar with for a good long while. She got her start in magazine publishing, moved over to digital, where she helped create a women's lifestyle site for Yahoo, which is now, of course, no longer Yahoo, but Oath. She's done a bunch of stuff.
It's just impossible to even say Oath.
I know, I know. I think it's such a fail, such a branding fail, but whatever. I'm not a brand consultant.
Because it's not a good, word out loud.
Yeah.
You can tell nobody talked to any radio people here. Anyway, you've probably particularly heard of Jennifer Omelini if you're a lady. She helped actress Zooey Deschanel launch Hello Giggles, a site for young women. Now she is, as we said, the chief content officer, which is kind of a new role in the world these days, at Shondaland.com.
And if you are saying what is Shondaland.com, shame, shame, shame on you. Try to keep up with pop culture, would you? Because even I know what Shondaland is. It is, of course, Shonda Rhimes' site, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder. Come on, man. I mean, even though many of those series have jumped the shark, that's just my own personal opinion. Come on. Shonda, if you're listening, come on the show. Let's chat.
Pull it back. Pull it back, Shonda.
Anyway, so Jennifer's going to tell you how she met Shonda Rhimes. Before any of that happened, though, she wrote a book. Jennifer did.
Yep. It is a little bit memoir. It's a little bit career guide, but kind of the kind you like. And it is all through the lens of her particular expertise. Well, first of all, congratulations on the impending launch of Shondaland.com.
Yeah. Oh, thank you very much.
Which we'll get to momentarily. But I feel like, and I'm really excited about this, you are here to make us smart about being a weirdo.
Yes.
Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. I feel like we've all spending a lot of time trying to be these perfect, polished people, and we think that's the only way to look and be successful. But I think that actually being weird is better.
Even you say in an office environment. I mean, you go on at length about this.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. If that's not organically who you are, right, and you're trying to put on a blazer and make your hair perfect and you're expending all this energy into trying to be something you're not, that's a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I feel like actually offices now are much more open to people who are sort of wired differently and more creative and feel anxious. And I feel like it's just things have changed in professional environments, but we're still pretending as if we all have to be this perfect poised thing.
It's so interesting because reading this book, I was thinking, and Kai and I have even had this conversation on the show, like the extent to which I think everybody feels a tiny bit like a fraud.
Right.
And so I read, you know, what I have read of this book and thought, this is actually potentially for everybody.
Yes.
Right? Or for everyone who's ever felt like I'm putting the blazer on, but let's be honest, it's a costume.
Right, right. We all feel like garbage people and we're all afraid that soon they're all going to know. Like that's it. Or we vacillate between I am garbage and I am God. And really, we're all somewhere in the middle. So it's like regulating your ego so that you can just be like, okay, yeah, I'm doing the best I can and I'm here in the middle and it's fine.
Can we back up for a minute and get to how you came to this realization?
Well, I mean, I think that it's just something that's in you or not in you. I mean, what realization? The realization that it's okay to be weird?
Well, I mean, your life story is the genesis of a lot of how you came to have this point of view.
Right. I'm an Italian-American girl from Philly. I was raised by teenagers. My parents were 16 and 17 when they had me. They had not graduated high school. And they had all these wild, we went on many wild adventures because they didn't stop being teenagers just because they had a kid. So we went on wild road trips and I was around wild partying. And I was this really not chill, hyper-emotional kid. Like really dorky, really lanky, braces, perm, glasses, really into reading, into like sort of esoteric things, even at a young age. So that's sort of where I think the misfit feeling began. And then it just continued on because then I just had a hard time finding my place in the world. You know, I was in restaurants for a while. I was in school three different times. And I just was having a hard time finding where my people were. And ultimately, I found them in publishing. But still, being in office environments, after not being in office environments for the first like 28 years of my life, I found offices to be really inorganic and really strange. And I didn't understand sort of the decorum and the etiquette. I didn't understand how nobody really said what they really thought. I didn't understand when I'd sit with HR and, you know, I'd be like, are you actually speaking human words? Right. Like, this is so sterile.
What was the first day like that you were ever in an office? Do you remember?
Yes, I do remember. I didn't know how to work the printer. I didn't know how to work the fax machine. I made my boss asked for a list of his contacts. He wanted a portable list of his contacts, which it did not register for me that he wanted this digitally. So I had everybody on staff send me their phone numbers, and then I cut them, I shrunk them down to a small font. I cut them all out and I put them on a business card and then laminated it with scotch tape and I handed it to him.
Oh, man.
Wow.
And he, I didn't have any idea how offices worked, right? And I was 28 years old. And like, he just kind of laughed and he was like, well, that wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but I'll take it, you know? So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I was like, well, what did you want? And then I fixed it.
We're kind of hammering this weirdo idea because it's in the title. But
right.
It's not all about that, right? It seems like a lot of some of these struggles, particularly in the workplace, had to do with blatantly inappropriate behavior, workplace inequality between men and women. How did you deal with that then? And how do you wish you dealt with it?
Well, I think that that's, and I write a chapter about this, about regrets, because I don't really have many regrets. But I do have regret about not standing up for myself, particularly in one job where I felt like I was being treated definitely inappropriately, and there was definitely a level of sexual harassment happening. It wasn't overt, and I think that's where we get confused. We feel like we just have to eat a lot of things, but it was definitely inappropriate behavior. And I was so upset and ashamed when that was happening to me. But I didn't do anything about it. Like, you know, I got drunk with my friends. I strategized. I fantasized about the man getting fired. But I didn't actually stand up for myself. And I really, really regret that because I spent a year of my life just, you know, being treated inappropriately, being made to feel small, having my work, having another person take credit for my work. And I wish I would have stood up for myself, because honestly, even if I had gotten fired from that job, I would feel better about how I behaved. I would be able to live with myself a little bit better because I just took it, and I took it, and I smiled, and I don't love that.
But that's a really compelling chapter, because I think at any age, you know, a lot of people, not to be exclusionary, but particularly women, look back over their careers and think, huh, yeah, I really should have done something about that. But that's a lot of what this book is about, is saying you have a right to these feelings. I'm not trying to change you. It's not, you know, self-help through self-change.
No, no, it's self-help through remaining precisely who you are, figuring that out and learning how to behave in the world. And, you know, the thing is, just one last note on that. I think that younger women are a lot better about all of this than women of my generation, sort of Gen Xers. I think millennials, they just don't stand for this kind of behavior. I've seen it over and over again where they're just like, no, thank you. I'm not. I mean, almost to the point where they need to temper themselves the other way. Like, you know, but they're very self-protective and very concerned with the way in which they are treated in workplaces and in the world. I think that, you know, the cluelessness that comes from millennials is in part our fault. I think that we're not training people correctly any longer. I think that people don't stay in internships, assistants. I don't think there's the same kind of like apprenticeship.
What, that's such a remarkably conventional thing for you to say.
Is that?
I mean, from a woman who wrote a book about not being conventional, right?
Well, I believe in climbing the ladder. I believe in taking your time with your career. I believe that you should learn as much as you can in every job. But I do think that we're not teaching sort of the basics of work etiquette to millennials because of how fast things move and how fast they're promoted. So they don't know how to write an email. They don't know how to ask for a promotion. They don't know how to talk about their vacation time. I had somebody come into my office with her laptop. Someone was trying to poach her on LinkedIn. And she shows me the screen and she says, "What should I do about this?" And I was like,
"No,
first of all, don't show it to your boss.
Don't show it to your boss."
I was like, "I can't, you know that I can't see this, right? This isn't public."
Wow.
So that
That's
was
a great example. What a really good example. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there's someone out there, there are people listening who have been described as people who think too much or too sensitive. You know, that still resonates in the workplace, a thinker, not a doer. What do you say to those people, and how can they make those traits work for them?
Well, I mean, I think that you have to be a doer, right? No matter what, you still have to be a doer. Like, you can't just, like, sit with your many feels and, you know, get through the workday. So it's part about checking yourself, right? And, like, how am I getting in my own way? How am I projecting all of my insecurity onto other people and trying to figure out what is real and what's imagined? So I think that's definitely part of it.
In a way, this is about not being afraid to fail.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I guess I wasn't afraid to fail. Well, because I had nothing to lose, right?
Right. How then did you wind up about to be the chief content officer at Shondaland? Because it's just a big, hairy job.
It's a thrilling, exciting, wonderful job. I'm so excited. And we're launching in the fall. I guess I had gotten to a point, and it's hard to even own this, but I had gotten to a point where I guess I had made it, and Shonda Rhimes emailed me. I mean, it
was, say that again. Holy cow.
Wow. Like,
I wasn't looking for a job. I had just finished the book. I had just turned in the final edits of the book. And I got an email from Shonda Rhimes, and I thought it was from the DNC. This is definitely not real. And I opened it, and I went and I talked to her for a couple of hours. It was supposed to last, you know, a half hour. We talked for a couple of hours. We felt really aligned with what we wanted to do. And yeah, I mean, look, that's what I'm saying. Like, you never know.
So gender pronouns aside in this next question, have you become now the man?
I mean, I guess.
At long last.
That was all I ever wanted. Please make me the man. I'm the woman. Let's say that. I'm not the man. I approach my career in a much more feminine way than being the man. But I do feel content and I feel competent. And I think that's the best you can hope for.
The book is called Weird in a World That's Not a Career Guide for Misfits, F-Ups and Failures. It's available now wherever you get your books. Yeah, I feel like it. I feel like I asked that last question wrong. I mean, you know, I didn't mean to make fun of her as a not man. Yeah.
Are you the man? Oh, no. You know what, though? Maybe I'm just overly trained, but I, whenever I need to feel more badass. Oops. Dang it. Awesome. I totally listen to that Aloe Black song, I'm the Man.
Oh, do you really?
And I play it super loud, and I listen to it like 30 times in a row, either wow. because I do feel that way or I need to. But no, I'm fine with that.
All right. Okay.
Me
All
personally.
Right. Good.
I was fine with it. You know, it's funny because I listened to her stories and I was like, I don't know if I have any weird at work stories because I always loved offices.
Did you really?
I like obsessively loved them. I love office supplies. Like I used to go to my mom's office and organize things.
Maybe you're just weird.
I think I know. I mean, I think my weird at work story is my weird obsession with work.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was actually thinking while that interview was rolling, I don't have any. I'm so conventional. I don't actually have weird at work stories. I just don't.
Really?
Yeah.
At all?
Well, I mean, you know. So here's one that some people may think is weird. I just personally think it's good personal hygiene. Every day before Marketplace goes on the air, I go and I brush my teeth.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a hygiene thing or like a radio? I would have thought that was just a radio, like a mouthfeel.
I like to be minty fresh. It's a mouthfeel thing.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
That's a little weird.
That's awesome. That's a good little tidbit.
And everybody can tell when it's like getting close to the deadline because at like 6 minutes to two, which is when we roll the show at 2 o'clock in LA, I'm trucking to the bathroom with my toothbrush with a little toothpaste on it. And that's how everybody knows it's showtime. That's how I know it's showtime.
Man, people are going to love that story, Kai Rizdahl.
What can I tell you? I'm just weird.
I know. I'm looking around my little home office here in my yoga pants thinking, I don't think I... I got nothing. Nice. Some days I like to get dressed before we...
Okay. And TMI. Scene.
I really miss having an office. I really do. I just mean versus workout clothes.
Got it.
And I also never have anywhere to take my excess cookies. I miss having an office because of the cookies.
That's like leftover avocado. How do you have excess cookies? You just eat and you eat the avocado. Like that whole thing where, what do I do with the other half of an avocado if I make avocado toast? There is no other half of the avocado.
Wait, you eat a whole avocado at a sitting?
Yes.
That's no joke. That's a lot of avocado.
Was it bad?
Anyway, what you do is you leave the pit in it so it doesn't get too brown.
No, you don't, because then you put it in the fridge and it gets cold. No, don't put avocado in the... I can't even. We're going to be here forever, and I have... No.
You have a lot of avocado rules.
Prior military.
You are conventional.
I thought you knew that about me.
Avocado. I'm breaking all the avocado rules. That is my weird jam. You can read an excerpt with Jennifer's advice on how to write work emails on our website, which is actually really helpful. Marketplace.org/makemesmart. Sat at a bus stop, sat in the whole day in her head. The many things she thought of, nothing that she said. All this world is crushing. The world is harder than it was, and harder still in hearing. It's just that way because what she doesn't know, what she won't know for
All right, so here's the deal. We have been talking on this show like since it started, which was right around Inauguration Day, how fast the news moves. You want to know how fast the news moves? While that Jennifer Omelini interview was rolling, the news changed. Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, which we had been talking about 15 minutes ago in Showtime as maybe not having the votes, turns out he knows he doesn't have the votes. He has put off the vote on the health care bill till after the 4th of July. That is how fast the news moves. You go away for 15 minutes and boom, you're off the news cycle.
I know. And we decided to leave it in the show. I mean, we could have sort of edited around it or whatever and tried to be more on the... But we are leaving it in because exactly.
Got to own it.
Like, this is why, thank the Lord for vacation. But at the same time, I'm going to be off in the mountains for 6 days and I'm going to come back and just feel like a truck hit me,
It's going to be like on Mars. Yeah, totally. You will not know
it's going to be a little bit like on Mars. But dear everyone, I want you to know that at least for the duration of the vacation, I will be taking Twitter off my phone.
Oh, gutsy move. Okay.
Boom.
Okay.
All right. It is time for our Make Me Smart question. A while back, I interviewed Yasha Kekas-Wolf, who is the chief marketing officer at Mozilla. And he is awesome. He's a startup advisor. And Mozilla is of course, the foundation, the nonprofit that operates the Firefox browser. And we had a really interesting conversation about my current obsession, moral capitalism, and how companies could operate. I asked him whether Twitter could maybe do the Mozilla model, because we had that conversation, I think, on the show about that. I think we played that interview on Marketplace Tech, and you can go find that on our website. But I also asked him our Make Me Smart question, which, of course, is what is something you thought you knew that later turned out you were wrong about?
Something I thought I knew.
That's a really tough question.
That's a big old hunker of a question.
Gosh, that is good.
Here's what I've been talking about a lot lately to friends and colleagues and people that I work with. When I started my professional career, I thought I understood how to be successful. And I thought success was driven on setting quarterly goals and beating quarterly goals and getting promoted to the next, you know, director level, to VP, to whatever. Like, that's what I thought that I knew. What it turns out, though, is that most organizations are built to try and reinforce what success looks like in a way that supports the business. You do your reviews on a yearly basis. That yearly review is where you get your worth or your validation for the success that you had. The thing that I believe that I know now that I would love more people to know is that the best way to take control over your personal career and your trajectory is actually to ignore the fact that a company has a review cycle that's on a yearly basis or quarterly or a half-yearly basis and plan on a time frame that's actually tangible for you. And that kind of ideological and practical ownership of your career that is connected to but also independent of the organization you work for, I think is the path to success professionally. And I think being successful professionally has a lot to do with being successful personally, too.
Well, that's totally true, right? Totally true. Mm-hmm. And vice versa, yeah. Right? I mean, if you are satisfied and happy in your personal life, then things are going to work out well at work. That's what I believe.
Well, that's what I was thinking, too. When I was listening to him, I thought you should and could do the same thing. We get caught up in artificial milestones in life. Like, forward momentum looks like this. It looks like, you know, first you do this and then you buy the house and then you have the baby or the whatever you think is the next required step. But there's no reason that you can't sort of set your own life calendar for what, you know, like, I will get to spring cleaning in December. So there.
Totally true. Totally true.
It could be December cleaning and nobody's going to yell at me.
Except you're just like off seasonally, but that's fine. Whatever.
It's fine.
You know, Molly Wood.
I mean, what I'm really doing is summer cleaning, by the way, and it is awesome.
Are you still like doing it now? Because you started like 3 weeks ago. I follow you on Instagram, you know.
That's true. No, yeah, it's taken a while. Thanks for noticing. No, it's... But I realize it's not my fault because I was really beating myself up about letting everything get to this level. And then I was like, I was sick for 2 months of the spring.
Oh, that's true. You totally were. You had the plague. That's a fact.
I know. So it's all come together. All right. Let's see. What else is going on? We heard, okay, I loved our episode on trickle-down economics. And the best part is that apparently so did you because, oh my God, did we get a lot of great feedback.
We totally did. And not all of it, by the way, congratulatory. There were some who thought we were full of it. There were some who, you know, wanted more on the Laffer curve. There were some who disagreed. But whatever. It's all good because here's my default response to any of that. This stuff matters and you need to know it. And I know sometimes it's boring and I know sometimes it hurts. But honest to God, this is about the way we run this country. That's all I'm saying.
Well, also, hopefully it wasn't boring and didn't hurt. I mean, you know.
That was my little toot.
Anyway, it was so good. All of the feedback was so good and so thoughtful and smart. And I loved it, particularly like disagree with us. It's wonderful. And almost everyone has done it in such a respectful, intelligent way. And that's exactly what we want to have happen, which is a good conversation and a real honest discourse where everybody can say what they think. And that's fantastic. And it's happening. And we liked it all so much that when we get back from vacation, we're going to do a whole follow-up segment on it. Now you are going to get just a taste and then some other of your thoughts.
Where do we mail a letter?
In the mailbox.
So Mark McCarr wrote to us. He asked this, how about a podcast on the reverse of trickle-down economics? What makes me think of this, he wrote, is the favorable effect on the economy from the earned income tax credit to low-income families. We could totally do that. That gets way down in the economic weeds, but all right, you know, we would think about that, I suppose.
Yeah. Also, you know, just like give us a depth chart on how deep you want us to go into the economic weeds. It's all pretty new to me, not going to lie. So I like it. I think sometimes Kai's like, everyone already knows this. And
I'm yeah, well, right. That's, I got to get over myself because that's, you know, it's totally not true.
Well, it's good that you know it. Yeah. That seems important because of your J-O-B. So
yes.
It's good.
Yes, yes.
Todd Ryan wrote to us to suggest a name for our listeners because we were wondering what we should call you guys. He said, I definitely agree that Smarties is not the right direction because A, it's a candy.
Yes.
He didn't say that, but It's a candy. Yep. Todd said, I've been thinking about this idea that we all make each other smarter and we all teach each other. So maybe there's a pun or a portmanteau around listener teachers. Weechers.
Get it?
Maybe.
Weechers.
Again, it has to go through the say it out loud filter.
Yeah.
Much like oath.
Totally does.
Weechers. All right, that sounds weird.
You keep rolling with these because you got them. You go.
Other possible names for the Make Me Smart listeners since last week, Smarty Pants, which was funny, a little on the nose. Yep. Smartians, my favorite. And then we got this funny one, which was McSmartigans, but you say it fast so it sounds Irish. McSmartigans.
Really? With the accent too? You did that?
I don't think that sounded very Irish, actually, but McSmartigans. That's funny.
All right, I'm going to mess up this guy's name. Chris Routon, Ruffton, I can't even tell, R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N. I'm going to go with Routon, tweeted at us. He said, recently selected for TSA extra screening at the airport, and the agent asked about the Make Me Smart book. He stopped listening after I said, moral psychology. So there's that. If you want to get through TSA, you know, just go ahead with The Righteous Mind by Jonathan Haidt, which gets me to two things you need to know. First of all, I'm on chapter four now. So that make it three things you need to know. Number one, I'm on chapter four. Number two, next Tuesday, in other words, the day we would ordinarily do this podcast is the 4th of July. We're not working that day. So we're going to be back on the 11th. And that is when it will really, really, really be time for the book club. Once again, Jonathan Haidt, The Righteous Mind, send us voice memos to makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we'll do a little radio-y thing where we put them together and make everybody sound smart.
Yeah, I'm telling you guys, the voice memos are the greatest. So please, please send them. Please read the book. I'm on chapter 8, I think, maybe chapter 9, and I've now gotten into the politics, so it's good. Just keep plugging away. Or skip ahead.
No.
While you're doing things, you know, if you're preparing for your own 4th of July vacation here in the U.S., review us on Apple Podcasts. Just sit Please. Down, write a little review. We would love that. Or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts because the downloads count too. Mm-hmm. Tell a friend about podcasts, including ours. Tweet at us, at Kai Rizdahl, at Molly Wood. Just like, you know, keep in touch. Mm-hmm. Keep in touch and have a great holiday.
And here comes the weekly question. Which version of the theme song is this? We will find out, I suppose. Make Me Smart is produced by Jenny Josephson and senior producer Nancy Fargali. Thanks to Jenny Hatfield for her hard work on the PopSocket campaign, which was a huge success. Thanks also, by the by, to those who gave and got the PopSocket, because that's what it's all about. Not the money, but participating is what I meant. This week's program was engineered by Bill Lance. Our theme music is composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez. Nice guy. You keep on talking, pal.
It was a tangible expression of your love, and we were grateful. The executive producer of Marketplace, who we also love, is Satara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark. Feel the love, everyone. Feel it.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.